This is All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, Director of Lincoln City Libraries. Today, I'm delighted to welcome as my guest Lynn Murphy, author of a book called The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. She is uniquely qualified to address this topic as an American linguist who grew up in New York State but now lives and teaches at the University of Sussex in England. Lynn, welcome to All About Books.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about your new book, The Prodigal Tongue.
Well, it's a book about the, as it says, the love-hate relationship between British and American English. It came out after writing a blog about the subject for about 12 years, and more specifically, it came out from the reactions and the conversations that I have with people because of that blog and all the conceptions that people have about the English in the other place and how it affects their English and things like that. And as I wrote it, I just got deeper and deeper into the history of the relationship between the countries and their languages and some of the more subtle cultural differences between us.
As I peruse the chapters of The Prodigal Tongue, I'm intrigued by a few of these chapter titles. For instance, the second chapter is called The Wrong End of the Bumper Shoot, Stereotypes and Getting Things Wrong. How did that come about?
The bumper shoot bit specifically came about because another blogger on British-American language differences, Ben Yagoda, had written something about bumper shoot being a Britishism that came to America. And everybody from Britain said, wait a minute, we've never heard of this word. And so I explore some of the stereotypes about British and American that lead to those kinds of misunderstandings. So in the case of Bumbershoot, it's associated with, well, it's an umbrella, so it's associated with rain, and rain is associated with England. But more importantly, it's a really silly word. And there is a certain assumption amongst Americans that British words are a bit silly. So Bumbershoot sounds completely believable as a British word, even though a British person has never said it. Then on the other side, you've got assumptions about American English coming from British people that are often stereotyping Americans as speaking incorrectly. And so any incorrect thing anybody says, you know, somebody in Britain will say, oh, it's the Americans ruining our language again, even again, if it's nothing that Americans have ever said.
But that's the perception. So it sounds like in The Prodigal Tongue, you're trying to maybe pull apart the pieces that are simply misperceptions or stereotypes from the reality of the use of the language.
Yes, I'm both trying to look at, you know, say, wait a minute, these things that you believe, maybe they're not right. Maybe we should look in a dictionary first before saying them. But also trying to say, why is it that we have these stereotypes? Why is it that we get things wrong?
What are the tools of your research trade? How do you track down these stories behind the words?
Well, a lot of them, you know, just sort of come to me, or the choice of what to write about sort of comes to me as I encounter differences in my everyday life. And then I just sort of go deeper and deeper. I use the Oxford English Dictionary a lot because mm-hmm. that does give the historical story of words. And I use corpora, which are large collections of text. So Google Books is one example of something that can be used as a corpus. So you take that large, you know, collection of text that's divided into countries and it's divided into years, and you can look at that and say, okay, well, what about Bumbershoot? Who's using that word?
Who was using Bumbershoot? I'm really curious now about that particular word, Lynn. What about Bumbershoot?
Well, Bumbershoot is looks like it was slang that came from Yale University. And I don't know why, you know, some sort of weird college slang for an umbrella. And it caught on because in a newspaper at one point, somebody referred to the British Prime Minister, I think it was Neville Chamberlain at the time, having his bumper shoot. And then the association with England went from there.
I see. So it sounds as if there are a variety of ways in which you then are able to use both what we might consider a traditional source of information, the Oxford Dictionary, as well as what technology is now allowing with all of the material made available through Google.
Yes, and that's what, you know, the dictionaries are now using as well. So I'm using the same sort of methods that the dictionary writers are using.
What's the difference between how you approach this material when writing for a popular audience versus for an academic audience?
Well, what's kind of interesting about me writing about this topic is I've mostly written about it for a popular audience. My work as a linguist has traditionally been about, you know, sort of very hard to explain points about how vocabulary is organized in the brain.
Ah.
And I'm obsessed in that work with antonyms and synonyms and how they're organized in our minds. That sort of stuff is my day job, or has been my day job. And now, because I started writing a blog about it, I started writing about it personally. It was really my diary to start out with. So I wasn't writing it for other linguists. I was writing it for whoever might be interested. So it's sort of backwards to the way a lot of academic popularization goes. I did the popular stuff first, and now I'm starting to write academic articles about it. And I'm finding it a little bit weird to go in that direction, because I'm so used to punching it up and trying to make it interesting and trying to draw the audience in, which is not something that academic writing usually tries to do, but I don't think it's a bad thing.
Lynn, would you talk some about how popular culture interacts with our experience of English? And something that comes to mind for me as an example is when the Beatles became so popular in the United States in the early 60s, what kind of impact does that popular culture have on British versus American English?
Well, it has definitely, it's how we're exposed to the other language most of the time, right? We don't, most people living in Nebraska don't, you know, just run into English people on the street. They hear it on the television, in the songs, and things like that. So through the popular culture, you get a window on how the other country speaks, but it's a very, very small window. And so we learn the words, but we don't necessarily use them in the same ways, for instance. So I do a British versus American, or British to American, American to British word of the year each year. And what I find is a lot of the British to American words of the year are slightly naughty words. And I won't say them on the radio, so I don't have to explain them too much.
Okay.
But you can find them on my blog, Separated by a Common Language. And what happens with those is you've got these slightly naughty words. I mean, bomb is one that we could say, where Americans start saying bum because they've heard it from English voices instead of saying butt, meaning the bottom, because it sounds less crude in somebody else's language. So that word has become a little bit different in American, a little bit more euphemistic in American than it was in British. Or when British people take on words, you know, one of the examples I often use is cookies. You know, so British people talk about cookies now. They don't use the word at all in the same way that Americans do. So, you know, something like a Fig Newton would not be a cookie in British English. They wouldn't know what to call that. So, you know, even though we're getting a little bit of exposure to each other, we're still changing the language in our own ways.
Our listening audience is made up of readers, of course, people naturally interested in words and language. How has your study of words and language impacted your own reading life?
Well, because of the book, I've read so much more history than I ever had as an adult. I was reading about all these things, you know, about the War of 1812 and about the things that led to the Revolutionary War and to the immigration patterns in America that I remember being taught about in seventh grade or something like that. And at that point, it made no sense to me. And it really made me feel like history is wasted on the young. You have to have a bit of experience of life to really understand what motivated these people.
Is that what you generally choose to read for leisure then?
I have to say, because my job is reading a lot, there's not a big difference for me between reading for leisure and leisure, and reading for work. I'm always, even if I'm reading a novel, I'm underlining bits in it that I notice are interesting linguistic points. So it's very hard for me to turn that off. I think the last time I enjoyed a novel was when I was on maternity leave, you know, because the rest of the time I'm always analyzing.
Well, I was curious to know to what degree studying linguistics makes you especially self-conscious about your own word choices.
Well, it makes me aware. I mean, I just corrected myself when you said leisure and I said leisure. It makes me aware when I'm talking interculturally about what I'm doing that's different from what other people are doing. In terms of reading, it just makes me hyper aware of everything.
Of those word choices.
Why did they put that preposition there?
Chapter 9 of The Prodigal Tongue is called The Prognosis. What are your thoughts as we move forward with the English language?
In terms of people worrying about American English taking over Britain, which is a lot of what I'm responding to in the book, there are a lot of worries about that in Britain. You know, my advice there is relax, it's okay, it's just some words. Your accents are still very different from American and continue to be more different. Our grammars are slightly different, have never been really very different. And so English in England and English in America will continue, I think, to be different things. In formal situations, they might get more similar because we need to read each other's words. Mm. But when we talk, we want to show who we are. We want to show we're American or British. But for English on the wider world stage, I mean, I'd say in the book that, you know, the 19th century was British English's century. That's the century of the empire, spreading English. The 20th century was the American century in terms of economic power and getting American English heard in many places through telecommunications. I think the 21st century is the world's English century, where, you know, there are now more people speaking English as a second language than as a first language, and they're doing interesting things to communicate with each other. So, you know, when somebody from Brazil talks to somebody from China, chances are they might be using English, and that is interesting to watch.
And that would be a whole different way of using the language, I would expect, if it's not your native language and you're speaking to another person for whom it is not their native language.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how that develops, what things adjust.
Who or what do you credit for your interest in language?
I don't know. I couldn't decide in ninth grade which class to take, so my mother said, just take Spanish. And then it was, you know, once I discovered language structure, I couldn't get enough of it.
Wow. Well, and it has led to the book that we've been discussing today, which is called The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn, thank you so much for being my guest on All About Books today.
Thank you very much for having me.
My guest today has been Lynn Murphy, creator of a popular blog called Separated by a Common Language, and the author of the book we've been discussing today, The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online. Visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.